Good morning, good evening, wherever you are across the world and the universe. Welcome to my Quantum Living Podcast, at the intersection of science and spirituality. I'm your host, Anna Anderson, quantum coach and teacher, intuitive guide, and above all, an inquisitive soul. This podcast is about how we can bring the various spiritual, metaphysical, and esoteric concepts validated by quantum physics and modern cosmology to the very practical level to improve and enrich our life experience as individuals, communities, and the humankind. Whether you are listening to this show while driving or commuting, doing chores around the house, relaxing on a couch, or flying in a spaceship across the galaxy, I hope you'll enjoy today's episode. Okay, let's begin. Hello and welcome back to Quantum Living. Today's episode is stretching the boundaries of this podcast from science and spirituality into the social arena, and that's not incidental. And this topic in particular bridges these three dimensions in a very interesting way. If you follow my work and my podcast, you know that with my head in the clouds, exploring other dimensions, with pretty much no limit where I am prepared to go, I always like to keep my feet firmly on the ground and bring the lofty and ethereal concepts down to the practical level. What does it mean for us? How can we use it? Otherwise, it's just a story. After all, this life, this reality is our direct experience, and the quality of this experience determines what we do with it, what we do next, including our spiritual and metaphysical studies and pursuits. Most people exploring quantum science and spirituality or metaphysics are familiar with the school of thought that this life is just an illusion, that what we call our reality is not real at all, meaning it is all fake. A dream created somewhere else that we receive by our brain and process it by our five or sometimes six senses. In fact, in my recent episode, We Are Avatars, I talk about us being interdimensional travelers, as our consciousness or soul fragment disconnects from our awareness during sleep and off it goes to other levels of existence. We can relate to the notion of the veil between the dimensions. That's not shocking anymore, and we can peek through this veil knowing that we can always come back to our firm and solid reality, where we know what is what and who is who, and so we feel safe. Safety is one of our primordial instinctive needs, as it is linked to survival, and so it will always psychologically override all other needs, except for air, as a top priority. Come to think of it, I just realized that I didn't include this need, the need to survive, in my Avatar episode, most likely because it is our fundamental need. If we don't survive, nothing else matters, of course. When we don't feel safe, this creates stress. I talked about the detrimental effects of stress in my earlier episode, Stress, the Final Frontier, so you may want to listen to it too. Okay, so where am I going with this? And why I titled this episode The Hall of Mirrors? This topic has been brewing in my mind for quite some time, as what is happening in our society creates a huge chronic stress we don't even notice. We no longer feel safe because of the increasingly blurring lines between what's real and what's fake in this 3D existence with our boots on the ground we call our reality. And one day, I suddenly realized that we are living in the Hall of Mirrors. And who's better to tackle this topic than my returning guest, Kate Montana? Kate is a professional journalist specializing in the fields of psychology, consciousness, alternative medicine, and health. With a master's degree in psychology, Kate speaks and teaches about consciousness, ego development, spirituality, and the nature of interdimensional influences. And let me tell you, Kate has also a strong voice in the social discourse arena, and so she is a perfect guest for today's topic. You will find more information about Kate, including a link to her powerful Substack blog and to her recent book, Cracking the Matrix, on my podcast website at quantumlivingpodcast.com. Kate's first appearance on the show was a few months ago on Hacking the Matrix. If you haven't listened to this podcast yet, I suggest that you do. You will love it. So now, I'd like to take our conversation to the next level and unveil, pun intended, why we are living in the Hall of Mirrors, where we can no longer trust whether what we see is the original subject, a reflection, or a reflection of the reflection of the reflection. You know what I mean. And most importantly, how can we smash it and escape from it? Or can we? Kate, welcome to the show. It's great to have you back.
Thank you, Anna. It's very good to be back. And oh, what a topic you've picked this time.
A challenge, a bit of challenge as always, but I'm sure that you are probably the best person I know to tackle it. So let's talk about the blurring lines between what's real and what's fake, and why are we living in the Hall of Mirrors?
Oh, it's such a broad and intricate and dimensional topic, Anna. I mean, truly, like the Funhouse Hall of Mirrors, you look in a mirror, and if there's a mirror behind you, then there's just this infinite line of potential and dimensions and possibilities and alternate worlds and alternate lifetimes. And it's like, holy moly. Talk about easy to get lost. And, it's so interesting that you picked this topic, because I've been thinking a lot recently about the nature of the world we live in. Let's not even get into computer simulations or alternate dimensions for a second, and just look at how life is our mirror. What I see and what gets reflected back to me is the consciousness level that I'm participating in. And, that old saw, that's that spiritual thing about, if you see somebody as a son of a gun and really, really selfish, that means what you are. And it's like, I've had to kind of pop that illusion, because number one, it's very limited to think that way. It's tempting to think that way, but it's really quite limited, because that disempowers us from our capacity to see it as it is, to be able to call a spade and be clear and clean. So say somebody is an abuser, let's say they abuse their children. That doesn't mean I'm an abuser of children. but it is a mirror that I am living in a lower consciousness vibration. That doesn't mean that I'm necessarily a lower vibration being, but I am aware of what I'm seeing in front of me. And if, as long as I don't get stuck in judgment about it, okay, then I'm not identified with it. And I can observe and call a spade. He is an abuser of children. And I can stand up for children and call out what is really real. And that is a very empowering place, rather than me going, oh my God, I can't say anything because I see this guy as abuser. That means I'm really an abuser. And as an abuser, who am I to say anything about anybody else? Oh, woe is me. It's it's kind of a downward spiraling approach. So to be able to see what's going on around us and be even with it and capable of even more. Yeah, I'm going to have to go back briefly to Cracking the Matrix and how I got into this whole subject matter of realities. Mm-hmm. Is, I at 40 years of spiritual work, 30,000 hours of meditation, mostly focused on bliss consciousness, getting out of my body, being one with the is and the all in all. And I was capable of, long moments, days even, of ecstasy, if you will. But I wasn't really connected to my body. Well, I wasn't connected to this world. I didn't want to be connected to this world because the world I saw was so demented and so difficult and so horrific and so abusive. And then I loved the bliss bubble and I loved the positivity bubble. You know, let's just think about nice, shiny things and be positive, and then the world will go that way. Well, then I woke up in 2020 and the world had gone in the exact opposite direction. The world had gone hell in a handbasket. You know, COVID hit, mandates and lockdowns and people with guns and forced injections. And I was like, holy Moses, what is really going on? So I realized that in my positivity bubble, I had been treating the rest of the world. I wasn't capable of seeing the whole picture because I was judging myself that if I saw, back to that, what I said earlier, if I saw what was wrong, if I looked at the shadows, if I looked at the violence, then, oh, whoa, that's me. And if I look at the shadow and I look at the violence and I look at the perpetration of misery onto humanity, then it would mean I am looking at negative things. Therefore, it's dangerous. I'm going to draw negative things to me. So we live in this kind of, talk about the hall of mirrors. We only want to look in particular mirrors, you know, because the other mirror isn't pretty, number one. And then depending on my spiritual training, my programming, my spiritual programming, my religious programming, I don't want to look at the dark side mirror. I just want to look at the positive side. So that's what I create. But in that, you know, that's kind of like a one-legged, a two-legged dog. Yeah, it's not going to get very far. We've got to be able to see the whole picture, not identify with all of those reflections in this mirror called life, and not get stuck in any particular mirror. It's an enormous journey. Wow. I hope some of that has made some sense.
Yes, and thank you. You have made an extremely important and interesting point, in fact, about our life reflecting our own energy, because this is an uncommon point of view. In fact, I've never heard it before, because the most common position is that, as you said, what we see in life is a reflection of our own energy, our own thoughts and emotions. And while I would agree to an extent that this may be the case, your point opens up a whole new conversation because it is so extremely potent and valid. When we are witnessing something painful or violent or negative in many different ways, this is not necessarily because our life is reflecting our own energy, but more so perhaps that this is something that we need to bring our attention to or notice or record it in our consciousness, and perhaps to even examine our relationship with it and our view on it. And even to take it to an extreme, as you said, to help us realize that this is not me. Okay? Yes, I can see it and I can see all the consequences of it, but I do not resonate with this energy at all. Mm-hmm. So thank you, because as I said, I've never heard this point of view, this angle before. And I think it is really important. And even, you know, throughout our conversation, it will be, I'm sure, relevant to some other points.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's another aspect to that I'd like to add, Anna, and that's that if I'm ignoring something because I can't look at it because it's negative, because I have a program telling me that I'm just going to draw bad things to me, or I'm a bad person if I see it. So I've got this Here we go. I've got this matrix. I've got this illusion. I've got this idea. I've got this belief system that I've bought into. And so that's my reality. That's the hallway I'm living in. But the thing of it is that how can we change what is demeaning, degrading, debasing, and destroying humanity? How can we stand up and change it if we refuse to even see what's going on?
Yes.
If I don't look at the abuser and see an abuser for what he or she is, and then take steps, whatever, you know, there's no right, wrong, and there's no one way and one choice in any given situation. It's all individual. If we're deeply rooted in our own soul, if we're grounded in who we really are, then and quiet enough to listen to those inner prompts that guide us. As I say, if there's no rules, if there's no right way or wrong way to treat an abuser, it's up to me to determine what my path with this person is. Expose him, her, call the cops, go slug him in the jaw. You know, what is my inner prompt? Yeah. And I have to be able, if I have done my inner work and opened myself to go beyond just the reflections and just the programming, and I know I can stand in my embodied love, then the right action, I'm going to be prompted to take that right action. And by God, I know that, you know, here we come to another spiritual program. It, you know, slugging the guy in the jaw isn't exactly what anybody on the spiritual path would say. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, well, that's not spiritual. I'm not going to limit spirit. And you know, the idea, we have many programmed ideas, very limited, very, very childlike, naive ideas of what love really is. I'm more convinced lately that love and the life force, universal intelligence, I think those are all the same things. And which doesn't limit love at all to, oh, I have to be nice and kind and sweet all the time. No, 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 no. I live on the side of a volcano in Hawaii. I live on this Haleakala, and she could decide to go off 5 seconds from now and blow me into kingdom come. Now, is that very loving? Well, you know, it's that's life.
Yeah.
And here I am. And, you know, if that happened in the next moment, I am in my power. I'm alive. I'm with you, Anna. I'm with your audience. It's a hugely connected moment. And if Haleakala exploded next moment and took me into the next reality, it's like, oh, well, that was all just, it's just life moving. Is it loving? Oh, is it bad? No, it's just life moving.
Yes, absolutely. Speaking about simulation, a simulation within a simulation is dangerous.
Yeah.
And can have stupefying effect on the mind, just like psychedelic drugs.
Yeah.
Think Star Trek holodeck, okay? Any magical tricks performed there were like a double negative, a fake within a fake. I don't believe that our brain, let alone our mind, is able to deal with it. It's like this question designed to scramble your brain. What wouldn't happen if you didn't do that? You need to pause and think for a moment to answer, because our brain is just not designed to quickly answer this question, which is a double negative. And many people are still having difficulty to wrap their mind around it. So when we are talking about simulation within a simulation, a reflection of the reflection of the reflection, this actually has a potentially, if not obviously, a strong negative effect or strong emotional effect, an effect on our psyche, as I call it, a stupefying effect. Because if we don't know what is real or what's not real, then how the heck can we realize and how the heck can we find the truth in our life as a beacon, as a guiding post? Or can we just, or should we just throw everything in our life up into the air, and wherever the pieces fall down, that's fine. And we just have to basically change our inherent need for stability, direction, and reference to whatever happens, happens.
I'm
You are a psychologist, a trained psychologist, yes?
You know, I have a master's degree in psychology. I went back to school in my 30s when I got into the spiritual arena because I wanted to understand what we understood scientifically about the mind and consciousness, which, as it turned out, wasn't all that much. So I am not a practicing psychologist. I didn't even intend to ever practice, but I just wanted the information base. So that's my thing in psychology. Mm-hmm. And then of course I write about altered states of consciousness because, having been in the spiritual arena for, again, 40 years, focused assiduously on becoming enlightened, going and experiencing different states of consciousness on the way to being just the I am, which is the pure state of enlightened being, I am, or just plain is. You know, there are not a whole lot of words or ways to explain that. But there are levels of consciousness and mind that lead to that ultimate unveiling, the dropping of the ego, the dropping of identity. I mean, Anna, if you want the ultimate farce, if you want the ultimate illusion, it's that I'm Kate Montana, a woman living on planet Earth. It's an identity. It is something it's a game I'm playing. It's a reality that I am engaged in, but it's not the ultimate reality. We're already, you know, we don't have to talk about computers or holodecks or anything else or matrices. Well, to say that we're already in a simulation. I'm in a simulation called Planet Earth, which is supposedly physical and isn't. It's all quantum fields of interpenetrating fields of energy. There's not a small tiny particle foundation to any of this. You know, there's nothing really that we can touch and grasp because physicality isn't really physical. So, you know, and then to identify as a female and then as a writer in a story on planet Earth, do you see what I'm saying? It's this really cool identity. We're already in a video game, if you will. Just being on planet Earth, ha ha ha, taking on seemingly physical bodies, ha ha ha. But we're having a great time doing it. So I would say that you know, moving from the universal I am, which is our spirit nature, which is pure love, universal eternal intelligence, having all these different experiences and expressions, we're in currently the expression of being human beings on a planet called Earth that is apparently physical. So that's the first illusion. Even though it's not an illusion, because, you know, if you reached through the screen and tweaked my nose, I would go, ouch, and it would hurt. And you know, and it's, and so spiritual, it's all so paradoxical, Anna. It's, you know, we are taught in so many different spiritual traditions that, oh, don't worry, it's all an illusion, right? Don't worry, you know, you're not really physical. It's not really happening. You know, don't chill out. Don't get all upset about, you know, World War III or, you know, digital currencies or vaccines or anything else. Don't worry, it's an illusion. Well, excuse me, if my child has a vaccine reaction and is crippled, it's real enough. You know, and so yes, ultimately we are playing a game here of called physical humanness. Yes, okay, but it's
yes.
Real. I am is experiencing that in this moment. It's very, very real. So yes, we are in this amazing hologram already, and it's very, very real because I am, you are. We all are experiencing this. Well, what's the next layer of this hall of mirrors?
Yes. Before we get to that, just on your point, some people can't make this connection in their brain that what they are experiencing physically through their physical senses, is actually not real, because if they can't put a finger on something and they are told that it is all an illusion, there's nothing there, you are just a thought in this universe, they don't know what to do with it. And I've seen people freaking out, you know, in this sort of conversation.
Oh, I don't blame them. I don't blame them because, you know, if you really went, well, this is all an illusion. Here's the paradox, Anna. It is an illusion and it isn't an illusion. It is an illusion and it's totally real at the same time. So you cannot say, oh, well, it's all an illusion, because that's not accurate. As I say, if you tweak me in the nose, it's going to annoy me and I'm going to feel it. So this is a very real experience we're having. And that's the whole point. We're having an experience. And so to say that it's an illusion is spiritual arrogance, because all of this whole thing, the nature of it is the nature of reality is paradox itself.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's really so interesting because you said earlier about, you know, you talked about the holodeck and that is a kind of a scary virtual reality to find yourself in. And it's in a way, I wouldn't say that the holodeck is really a scary illusion in and of itself. Yes, okay, it's a projection of a reality, but the nature of the holodeck, if you're a Star Trek fan, which I definitely am and was.
Absolutely.
You have physical experience.
Yes, yeah.
It's as if you were right here on planet Earth. There's absolutely no difference. You can drink the water, you can breathe the air, you can bleed, you can have the same experiences. And so I wouldn't say that the holodeck is a how can I say this gently, a mind messer upper a mind messer, there we go, keep it clean, it's a mind messer upper. Now what is a real mind messer upper is putting on a VR headset. Now you're in a virtual world in your head. Okay, so now you're having experiences in your head. And, you know, and we all know, most of us know that the brain doesn't know the difference between physical experience and dreaming, imagining, which is one of the tools of manifestation, personal manifestation. Okay, you put yourself in a position of, oh, I want to drive that red Maserati, vroom, 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 and I imagine it, and I imagine the wind in my hair and the vibration under in the seat, and, you know, shifting those gears and driving on those hills, and blah, 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 man. So my brain is like going, oh yeah, cool, she's driving a red Maserati right now. It doesn't really know the difference. When we get in a VR headset experience, it's like the same thing. That is a simulation. And our body and our brain will register that as reality, just like it does our imagination. And so we're starting to program and manifest whatever reality we're in these virtual headset, violent games, blood, guts, gore, torture, grotesque sex acts. I mean, so it's like what we're doing to our bodies is horrific in that scenario. So that's one step towards the abyss. And one of the things that I started to touch on it in my book, Cracking the Matrix, but since I finished the book 2 years ago, I've really come to understand that part of the major agenda of this non-physical, interdimensional, negative, energetic intelligence that's on this planet that the Greeks called the Archons, and I've picked up that terminology, and that's how I refer to them. The Kahunas here in Hawaii refer to them as the E'epa. The Iroquois Nation refers to it as Wetiko, them as Wetiko. Of course, Christians refer to this intelligence as Satan. Is the whole agenda that I'm finally understanding, because this is a disembodied intelligence, okay? It's non-physical, interdimensional. And it wants to literally be able to embody. It wants what we've got. And the way to get us to give ourselves to that, to them, to it, to that non-physical intelligence, how better than to introduce us into a 2D mental reality where we're not even in our bodies? That is an open doorway for interdimensional energies and influences to penetrate and literally take us over. So I seriously have been looking at this whole virtual reality drive that we're going into, let alone AI augmentation with neural lace implants in the brain to be able to think faster and crunch numbers faster and have more information at our fingertips. You know, we're treading into this 2D mental dimension where this influence can literally take over. And I think that's part of the whole drive behind this that we're not seeing, which is pretty doggone scary.
Yes, absolutely. But now the big question is the emergence of AI a blessing or a Trojan horse, which you have answered at least partially? To me, the most scary AI applications are deep fake videos and human lookalikes. Now, the human lookalikes I'll address again in a moment, but I'd like to give a very scary example of a deep fake video. Last year, there was a video circulating on social media of a speech given by the ex-governor of the Reserve Bank of Australia that was given at a media conference. In it, he announces a new government initiative of a special online stock trading scheme accessible to all Australians, where people can invest as little as $200 and start making profit within days. The questionable veracity of such a scheme aside, if you didn't think as, oh, you know, this is just rubbish, what he's talking about, that deep AI fake was really scary. The voice, the words, the speech pattern, the mannerism were his. Even when you watch closely, his lips were absolutely synced with the words. The post with this video included a link to deposit the money, of course, and it looked so real, apart from the, you know, sheer nonsense of the issue, that I'm sure many naive people got actually fooled and sent the money, because they were looking at the ex-governor of the RBA, they knew and trusted, and so they would have clicked on the link and sent the money. I actually called the RBA, the Reserve Bank of Australia, and told them about this. And they said, yes, they were aware of the scam, and the video was removed from social media within a couple of days. But to be able to sync his lips, obviously done by AI, precisely to the words spoken was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? Deep fake videos.
The technology is so farther advanced than we have a freaking clue. The technology of AI is way farther down the road than almost 99% of people have a clue about, number one. So it doesn't surprise me at all. And this is such an interesting subject, because there's no way you can know unless you are grounded in your body, deeply grounded in your sense of spiritual true being, so that you are so steady that when information, when fake or real, comes to you, you can tell the difference, because you can feel it. You sense it. You get what it's just like coming, driving down the road, and you come to a fork in the road and something says, oh, I think I better go left. If I go right, it'll actually get me to my destination quicker. Okay. Normally I would go right, but God, there's just that little something in my gut, or my, you know, little whispering voice that goes, no, go left this time, go left. So I go left. What that is my quantum intelligent self, my embodied self. And if we look at how reality really is, and, you know, going back to all quantum fields of information, the road is a quantum field of information. A mile down the road, there's a nail in the road. Okay, so my quantum field reads the quantum field of the road. A mile down the road, picks up the information. There's a nail in the road. I'm going to run over that nail. I'm going to have a flat tire. It's not conscious. It's not mental. It's not, you know, oh, some people will get a visual because they're very visual people. They'll pick up the information that way. Some people are auditory. They'll get that little whisper going, turn left, turn left. Others just have a gut sense. This is how they read information. Invisible information, turn left. Okay. And they turn left. So the whole trick to this entire subject matter, Anna, is learning to get into our bodies where we can, because the body never lies. The body is pure knowing, is pure energy, is pure life, pure love. And left to its left unmolested, it is our greatest guidepost and talisman. So, you know, so there's no difference between that fake video and that nail in the road, a mile down the highway at the crossroads. If I am really embodied and I'm deeply in a still inner, even though I'm active, you can be very still within. And then the information is available. And you look at that guy and you go, oh my God, that's my cousin. I know my cousin. And he's saying that. And something inside will you go, that's not your cousin. Something inside will guide you correctly. But if you're not centered, if you're not in your body, if you're not awake to what's going on in this world, if you are, you use the word naive, naive people sent their money into this website. That's we're getting to the place where we cannot afford to be naive. We cannot afford to be ignorant. We cannot afford to live in a positivity bubble that if I just, you know, focus on white light, it'll all be okay and go away. That isn't going to happen. We have to be real, present, and really accountable and accounted for in our bodies, in our lives, moment to moment, so we can navigate this stuff. And it hasn't just be, it's only begun to get gnarly.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I'm so glad that this point keeps coming over and over throughout the conversation, because it is, as you said, the only solution for us to smash that hall of mirrors and to understand which mirror is the actual subject and all the others can go away. So again, is the emergence of AI a blessing or a Trojan horse or both in terms of the development of our technology, of our society, etc.?
Oh, it's definitely, it's like anything, Anna. You know, you can take a hammer and build a house, or you can bludgeon somebody to death with it. It's about the consciousness behind the tool. AI is a tool. And it's about the consciousness that programs it and sets it in motion. Now, at a certain point, and we're already at this point, AI is self-teaching. AI is on its own agenda. It's on its own intelligence arc. And we're way behind the eight ball on that. Again, I have serious concerns about AI as it's been set in motion nowadays with the consciousness that's been behind the development, which is all about, you know, resources, money, power, control. Okay, so if that's the consciousness behind the development of AI, then we're screwed. That's really, really gnarly. That's gnarly. Now, are we really screwed? No, not really, because who are the real creators here? I always have to come back to who is in power. It's really easy to go, oh, well, you know, Bill Gates and the WEF and the WHO and the NIH and the CDC and President whoever, they're in power. No, they're puppets, Anna. You talk about a hall of mirrors. You know, we see these external figureheads, and they're puppets. And I wrote about this interdimensional influence behind the scene, there are beings that have been penetrated by this influence. They're no longer human. They're inhuman. They have no empathy. They have no concern for humanity. They have no kindness. They can mimic love. They know what it's supposed to look like and act like and sound like, and they can mimic it. They don't feel it. And they don't give a hoot about other people. It's all about their agenda. They have been taken over. I'm convinced of this, and whatever. And there are a lot of people who go along with that and agree with me. And then there's behind that, I think there's layers of control behind layers of control. So we can either be really freaked out by that and go, oh my God, we haven't got a chance. Or we can go, wait a minute, who are we really? You see, the only reason this influence has taken any sort of power whatsoever is that we have been convinced that we are weak, that we are gullible, that we are powerless, that we are not connected to the divine, that we are clods of clay, that we're debased, debauched, violent, greedy. We have been so convinced that we are powerless and that we need external control for our own good, like marauding little baby, vicious babies. You know, we've been convinced that that's who we are. We're the exact opposite of that. We are these amazing spirit beings of pure love here having an experience on this planet that seems to be physical. And we're the creators. We're the powerhouse. We're the power source. And the whole thing about the whole game of this interdimensional influence with Tycho, the Archons, whatever you want to call it, is that it wants to be able to take us over. And to do that, we're the creators. We have the power. It has to convince us to create its reality for it. Because we're the creators. We buy into the, oh, we're scum and we need authority and we're weak and gross. We buy into that. Our self-esteem is nowhere. We're convinced we're just nothing and worth nothing. And it's just like, oh my God, we create our own prison and open the door for this other influence to come in and, yeah. Well, you know, okay, fine. Take over. I don't know anything. Oh dear. I'm helpless. I'm weak. I'm terrible. It's like, oh my God, what a story. And yet we're the powerful creators creating the prison for this force. It's like, wow, we're the ones creating AI and implementing it and putting it in the world. You know, this intelligence doesn't have the power to pick up a pencil.
You know, I really thank you for that. I really hope that this narrative will change soon, or sooner rather than later, that most people will wake up to their own empowerment, to their own power. And just as a quick reference to another movie, one of my big favorites other than Star Trek, The Matrix, okay? If you look at the story of Mr. Anderson, pun not intended, that's why maybe I think so often about this movie, is that for a long time, he wasn't aware of his power and he just couldn't accept it because of what he was experiencing and seeing all around and everyone telling them, no, you don't have any power, including at some point the Oracle. Told him, sorry, kid, but you don't have any power. Until one day in a fight with those evil forces, with the Matrix creators, something has shifted inside him. And he realized that, yes, I do have a power. And then we saw what he was able to do with them. Okay, so I really hope that this narrative and this level of consciousness will change very soon. Now, I mentioned earlier AI human lookalikes. One critical difference that I can see between humans and AI is that while they are beating us in cognition, and that's purely due to the speed of processing data, AI cannot generate emotions. To do this, I believe it would need to be a hybrid of a machine and human brain, sort of like Borg from Star Trek again. And I feel that if and when AI becomes a sentient being somehow, capable of feeling and expressing emotions rather than faking them, this will be a pivotal moment, a tipping point for humanity, if you like, whether good or bad, as the human race will incorporate sentient AI made in our image. Now, some of the ET typologies people claim to have verified, and I've seen some on Gaia, for example, include grays as two subspecies, the original race, tall and skinny, and the AI version, who are much shorter, and so it's easy to differentiate between them. I think that's a great idea, and we should mandate the same thing, that all AI that are human look alike must be no taller than, say, 4 feet. Then we won't be fooled. What do you think about AIs and not being able, at least now, at this point, to generate emotions and then to mandate that all lookalikes, human lookalike, must be much shorter so that we can spot them?
Oh, that's funny. You know, it's sentience. AI is already sentient. It's already cognizant of itself, but it is not capable of emotion, and that is the big deal. And that is the main drive, I think, towards creating biosynth humans, because until AI is merged with a biological entity that can feel, it's never going to go there. It's interesting. There was a TV show called Battlestar Galactica, not the first one, which I think actually was back in the 60s, but a second one that was made in the 90s. And it was a whole about the battle of the cyborgs versus humanity. And it was, you could not tell, nobody could tell the difference, including the cyborgs didn't know they were cyborgs. I mean, so you came to a place where, you know, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck and it bleeds like a duck and it feels like a duck and it thinks it's a duck, well, heck, it may as well be a duck, whether it's a cyborg or not, it doesn't matter. You know, at a certain point. I'm not going to say shaky. Well, it is shaky ground. It's such massive question marks. I think AI without emotion, without the capacity to feel, is the most dangerous thing we could possibly let loose. If it's not programmed correctly with a very high level of consciousness to do no harm behind it. I'm going to back up, as always, to, well, who's in power here and what do we really want? What do we want? What do you want, Anna? What kind of world do you want to experience?
Well, a world that has no violence and that is interesting enough for us to experience something new and be able to create. To me, violence indicates some sort of emotional deprivation, the deprivation of human compassion and disassociation from other people. Because let's face it, if you can kill someone, if you can hurt someone, and you do it consciously and on purpose to satisfy your own agenda, for all intents and purposes, in my books, you are not within the definition of human. This may be a rare view, but that's my view. That's why the world that I would love to live in would have no violence and enough opportunities and experience and interesting aspects and absolutely opportunities to create, for us to enjoy it, learn and grow for as long as we are here.
I would think that the majority of human beings would respond the same way. So we are the creators. So it's up to us to create that reality. And we can't do it with our heads cranked around trying to fix what's broken and what has already come to the place of desperation, control, totalitarianism, fake everything. You know, it's truly the satanic, you know, it's the upside down pentagram. It's everything is reversed now. Black is white, white is black, good is bad, bad is good. And so we are in this, which is this deliberate hall of mirrors, because things, here's the programming that I'm seeing, is that it's become so confusing and so demoralizing and so disempowering for people on so many different, every possible level, economic, physical, entertainment, just families are being destroyed. There's no more family unity, sexuality, no more men and women. Where, you know, women aren't even going to have to birth babies. We can grow them in replicators. We can hook them up to AI immediately. There's this horrific reality, quote unquote reality, that we're being driven into. And that we cannot fix that. And so I'm in, it's a really interesting position to be in, Anna, because I'm in this position every day, all day, is that I stay cognizant of what's going on so that I'm not naive. And yet I identify less and less. I'm in a totally different reality than I was in 4 years ago. Frankly, I'm in a different reality pretty much every 6 months. My level of comprehension of what is actually happening on this planet, what we're facing, what we're really, really dealing with, and what that is commanding me to do is, if I want the vision that you just expressed, and I do, then at a certain point, I have to stay aware of what's going on around me so I'm not naive and caught flat-footed. I'm embodied sufficiently so that I can read situations and I can depend on my own spiritual intelligence, and simultaneously start embracing and dreaming exactly what you were talking about, this whole new reality. How that will come into fruition, I have not got a clue, and it's not my job to have a clue. That's life. That's life's intelligence. But when we start turning our eyes and our vision and our hopes and our dreams and our heart and our hands towards embracing life and what is life-giving, which is not wearing a VR headset when you're getting married to some poor woman, which is not about, you know, doing so many drugs because the world is so desperate you cannot even bear to live anymore, which is not about self-mutilation and cutting because you cannot bear the pain of the existence, which is not about, you know, any of these demoralizing anti-life decisions, you know, letting my kids watch violent video games because I'm too tired to care. This is all anti-life programming. We've got to pick ourselves up out of this morass and go, wow, this doesn't work for me anymore. I'm going to change and grow to where my heart and my body and life itself is leading me. And then start to lean on those thoughts, those experiences, those choices. Take the damn telephone and the video games away from the kids. Put it down yourself for long enough to go sit under a tree. Go barefoot. You know, spend 15 minutes a day unhooked from all the programming and reconnect with life. This is what is going to reconnect us to ourselves, to our spirit nature, to our pure love nature, to our power. And then together in this consciousness, rooted in our bodies, you know, this is why it's so important to be, you know, let's keep it real. It's nice to think spiritually that this is just a quantum reality, but it's got no practical application for me. So I'm going to get my hands dirty and start planting the garden. I'm going to love my kids. I'm going to take the phone away from them every so often. It's just like, these are life affirming decisions we can make for ourselves and start walking toward this other reality. Now, this other reality that is what you expressed, and I think everybody would dream of, may include AI, but is coming from a healthy, life-oriented consciousness. And who knows how AI could possibly blossom and be of assistance, and where that pathway would go when we're grown up enough and we're passionate enough in our love and our life force and our life orientation and our pure being to engage it.
Thank you. That's our power. Did you know, by the way, that apparently in some countries it is legal to marry an AI? Oh my goodness. Wow. Okay, well, we could, Kate, be taking this conversation into hundreds of very fascinating and exciting directions, but time is catching up with us. So now I've got an interesting final question for you. If you had a magic wand and could make just one change in this non-real reality paradigm we live in, what would it be?
So interesting. I could spend 5 minutes of dead air time contemplating that at least.
It's okay. I'll cut it out. Take your time.
Well, I'm always hesitant to pick up a magic wand and employ it over anything other than myself, because
that was a figure of speech, obviously.
Yes, I understand. I understand that was a figure of speech, and still it's a good one. I don't have the bandwidth yet to be able to make a decision like that. I could say, oh, well, I wish, you know, if I could wave my magic wand, it would be, I wish everybody on planet Earth understood who they really are. Okay, that would be my answer.
Okay.
And I don't know, God, the ramifications of that, Anna. I mean, you know, I can say those words. Now, does that mean that the 8 billion people on this planet would interpret those words in their own way and then manifest that? We'd be just as bad off as we are now. So that's why I come back to, I hesitate to make any sort of grandiose decisions like that. I would say that I would wish that I would manifest who I really am, pure being of love on this planet, and let that radiate and shine and have the influence and the impact that it does, that would be of the greatest influence, and not the greatest influence, the greatest benefit to all. That would be, you know, I'm gonna have to keep it in my own backyard.
Thank you. I really love your answer, and it's beautiful. So on this note, Kate, thank you so much for this beautiful conversation. And once again, as always, it has outgrown the time available and the capacity that we have here. But thank you so much. And I really enjoyed it. And I'm sure that our listeners will enjoy it too. Once again, people can find more information about Kate and her work on my podcast website. Any final word, any final thoughts you would like to share with us, Kate?
I just would like to say that it may look grim, but we are at the most amazing tipping point and the most enormous opportunity that humanity has ever faced. And I know, because we are life. We are love. We are pure beings of love, life itself. And the nature of pure love, life, is to grow and evolve. And it's an eternal movement towards more and more and more, greater and greater expression. That's our nature. I trust that. So despite how it all looks, if we get grounded in our nature, in our bodies, and in our pure love nature, and roll with it, we don't know where it's going to take us. We can't know how it's going to take us, but it'll take us where we want to go.
Beautiful. Another great conversation. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Kate.
Very nice. You are so welcome, Anna. Aloha.
Aloha. All the best. That's all for today, folks. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you really loved it, please post a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to encourage others to listen to it. For the show notes, guest and podcast info, reviews, comments, and much more, please visit quantumlivingpodcast.com. And if you'd like to dive deeper into quantum living and explore how you could work with me, please contact me, and I'd be delighted to help and support you on your quantum journey. I am your host, Anna Anderson. I look forward to connecting with you in the next episode of Quantum Living. Until then, keep your vibrations high and be well.